Management Part 1.
So we did sort of a brief overview of the management going through your algorithmic approach, but let's get into some more detail about the management options. And you know what? Let's hear it from the residents. So what have you tried so far?
So far, I had the patient blow their nose, and then I sprayed oxymetazoline and had the patient apply pressure.
So that's perfect. That's the perfect first initial intervention to try. Now, we want to be ready for a backup plan in case this doesn't work. So what are we going to do? What is in your mind to try next if she's still bleeding after 15 minutes of pinching her nose?
In my mind, the next steps are going to be another way to stop the bleeding. So that could be something like silver nitrate. That could be liquid cocaine. Ultimately,
I think... Do you have a good supply of liquid cocaine?
Yeah, in my backpack all the time.
Okay, just
no, I do not have a supply of that. I think that the end goal, like the last resort, is going to be nasal packing.
So, hey, Janelle, Jimmy, let's go back to you for one second here. So what are some other things that are on your minds of things that we could try if this nose is still bleeding?
The cocaine is also on there. We're lucky at our facility that we're able to get it from pharmacy if we need to.
There's also TXA that we can try. I usually just go for packing if it's really that bad.
That was great. So just like what John said, he had the patient blow her nose and then spray some oxymetazoline and pinch her nose. That is the first initial attempt for the patient who's not hemorrhaging to see if you can get the bleeding to stop. But if it's not going to stop, then we have to progress stepwise through that algorithm that you laid out right at the top for us, Stuart. And one of the steps in there that is optional is to see if there's something that we can cauterize. So you take a look. If you see a bleeder, then you know that you have a target. You have something that you can try to cauterize. And silver nitrate is one of the methods that we can do this by.
Absolutely. And, silver nitrate basically causes a chemical burn. And that's a way of stopping the bleeding. Ironically, when there is a lot of blood there, it doesn't work as well. It really works when you're able to kind of get that mucosa to stop bleeding. So that's just, it's as dry as possible. It's always a little bit moist. Mm-hmm. When that silver nitrate makes a chemical reaction with that mucosa, it's what does the cautery.
So a couple things to keep in mind with silver nitrate cautery. Number one, you just told me it's a burn. So I'm going to assume that probably hurts.
You got it. It does indeed hurt. So, I mean, to use this without first using some topical anesthetic, either
that's barbaric.
Either it's the cocaine that your residents seem to be so interested in or the lidocaine, that's kind of like has to be in there because
it's
got to
be done first.
Yeah.
And then the second thing to keep in mind is what's classically taught about cautery. If you're going to do it, you only get one side of the septum.
That's right, because especially with it's interesting. I didn't actually realize this. There's actually extremely potent and less extremely potent versions of silver nitrate. And the really potent stuff that's, I think it's 90% or something, causes double depth of burns. You can actually burn right through the septum and people can have a hole. So the last thing in the world you want to do is make these burns on both sides of the septum. That's the thing that they tell you to avoid. The other real finesse thing about this is that if you go directly for the bleeding point, often you make it worse with the trauma. The best way is to go in a circumferential way around the bleeding point, cutting off its feeding vessels, and then bullseyeing in the middle. That seems to be the most effective way of cauterizing with silver nitrate.
So you're circling in before you come in for your landing.
For the kill, yes. Or just circling around the lesion, and once you see that it stopped bleeding, ceasing and desisting, because you don't want to use any more silver nitrate than you absolutely need to use.
Another thing that's mentioned in all the textbooks and the review articles is electrical cautery.
Yeah, listen, for many, many years, this was the mainstay of treating these things. And I just have a problem with any procedure that has a chain of metal that starts with the inside of my nose and ends at a wall socket.
Yes.
Patients rightly get very nervous when you pick up the electrocautery, and it can definitely be more effective than the silver nitrate in that it can burn through a little bit of blood and actually cause the burn that you need to stop the bleeding. But I don't know. I don't use it anymore. I think it's a little bit medieval. It's definitely an option, but it's one that more often the ENT is going to be using than you.
So cautery really only works if you see a specific area that's bleeding. If you don't see anything bleeding, there's nothing to cauterize, right?
Yeah, basically you got to see something bleeding, a bleeding point, or something that obviously was bleeding. And that's usually like a nipple sign. You see a little nipple, you see a little tiny bit of an eschar. Mm-hmm. Those are the signs of that blood was there. So one of the really fascinating things that's come out in the literature studying nosebleeds is that whether or not you actually see a bleeding point and choose the chemical cautery or electrical cautery strategy, you can also, in those cases, just use ointment. Often bacitracin antibiotic ointment is used, even Vaseline. And if you use those instead of the cautery, the outcomes are about the same. And so whether it's kind of a little confusing, but it's an acceptable alternative when you see or whether you don't see a bleeding point to just use the ointment. And some patients that are really skittish about you sticking things up there, that's a legitimate strategy.
So what are you doing? You're taking a Q-tip and smearing it in? You're letting them digitally apply it?
Yeah, exactly. You basically, either one is acceptable.
Hey, so it's been about 15 minutes and she's still bleeding.
Okay, so working through the algorithm, then what do you want to do next?
So I looked in the nasopharynx and I could not see an area of bleeding. So I think that the best next step is to do some anterior nasal packing.
Great. Okay, yeah. I mean, if you can't see a specific area that you can cauterize, then...
There's nothing to cauterize.
There's nothing to do there. So yeah, great. Let's try an anterior nasal pack.
All right, so let's talk about nasal packing. And first of all and foremost, anterior nasal packing, because that's going to be the majority of cases are going to stop with anterior packing. So just to be clear, this is a scenario where you've gone through all the initial steps, you've cleaned out the boogers, you've taken a look, you've anesthetized it, you're looking for something to do, and all you're seeing is blood. And you're like, I got to stop this. And that's when you start your anterior packing. That just sort of sets it up. So one thing, in addition to the local anesthetics that we should mention, is this is very frightening for people. And there are some patients that you're going to need to use something systemic. You might need to use a little bit of systemic opioid or benzodiazepine. Make sure that you're using the appropriate monitoring equipment. If you're going to do that, you might even need to hang on to these patients if you're going to be giving them actual systemic medications.
But this is painful. This is an uncomfortable process.
Right. I mean, if it means giving a patient post-traumatic stress disorder from sticking things up their nose and hurting them, then you have to consider that. It might be the best thing to be a little more careful and deliberate. Now, in the old days, the way that you packed a nose was manually. You would actually take this long, long packing strip and you would piece by piece fold it into the nose. And the thing that was always so incredible about that, Jess, was how much room there is in the back of the nose. It's a huge area. And it would take many, many meters or feet, if you will, yards of this tape, stacking it in layers to actually occlude the whole space. So you're tamponading, and that's what you're doing here, tamponading that side of the nose.
It also kind of sounds like it would be a grotesque Mary Poppins moment to remove that.
Yes, exactly. Like you basically pulling...
The magician pulling the scarves.
Yes, and they just never stop
Stop.
And that's exactly what it was like.
And they change colors too on the way out.
Yeah, because they get like less magic. And less red or more and more red depending on how much blood is on them. Exactly. So that is the history of it. And I think everyone needs to be reminded of what we had to put up with. And now there's so many proprietary products out there that make this so much easier. And they're all some variant on the theme. They're all basically some form of a tampon. And some of them are coated with hemostatic agents. Some of them are coated with different polymers. And there's all kinds of brands out there, but the theme is all the same. These things are inserted straight back into the nose. They have some sort of a string or applicator in the end that lets you know that it's in there, and it usually just comes out just a little bit past the nasal margin. And they're a miracle. They work so well because they expand and they tamponade the bleeding. They work in the vast majority of cases.
When you are inserting whatever anterior pack you're using, I think it's helpful to actually picture that drawing, that netter drawing of the nasopharynx and the turbinates. And you want to basically try to slide it along right below the inferior nasal turbinate.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone always makes fun of me because sometimes they come in like small, medium, and large, these different products. And everyone's like, well, for me, I would use this one. But for you, Dr. Squadron, a larger one would be indicated. I want you to know that we all have big nasal spaces inside.
Right.
Whether we have big noses or not, okay?
It just matters what's on the inside.
It does matter what's on the inside. But in all fairness, there are some patients that do require two of these devices to actually totally occlude the space. And you have to kind of play it by ear a little bit. Of course, you know what you're going for. You're going for a patient that's reasonably comfortable whose bleeding has stopped.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important to mention there are a lot of products out there. We're trying to avoid using name brands of all the specific ones. But the bottom line is, whatever one you're using, you need to look at the packaging and the instructions on that because some of them require different things. Some of them you have to soak in sterile water before you insert them. Some of them have slightly different instructions. So you want to, and the length to which you insert it. So you just want to be aware of exactly what product you have and make sure you're using it correctly.
You know, one of the concerns with a lot of these products comes on the back end when you're taking them out. And there's been a lot of criticisms of some products, the earlier ones especially, that when they're coming out, if they don't have the nice coating on them, if they're not dissolvable or absorbable to some extent, they kind of rip off the epithelium.
Ouch.
And so there are some products out there that are more like a foam type product that you insert into the space and it expands and it kind of degrades on its own. And there's some variants of these products that might be a little more patient friendly, I would say.
And pretty much all of these are going to have some type of a string that's coming on the outside of the nose so that you can remove it when the time comes. And it's important that you tape that up to the patient's cheek. You know, you don't want that going in their mouth. You don't want it going all the way in their nose.
And it's no joke. When you're talking about sticking something up someone's nose so far back that, you know, drip, 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 you know, blood is going to be coming down the posterior airway. And that's what we're talking about here. It's no joke. If that patient, for example, is elderly, has COPD, has some heart failure, that can be dangerous. And so if you're in a situation like that, when you're putting the packing in, you do stop the bleeding, keep in mind that older, more vulnerable patients should be considered for observation after this procedure.
Even with an anterior pack?
Absolutely.
Now, are you coating the outside of whatever anterior packing material with an antibiotic ointment?
I do that. But again, I think you have to really refer to the manufacturer's recommendations on these various products to do what's optimal for that product.
Lots of pearls there. But the key things, I think, is you need a patient that's happy and sedated if possible. Not too much, but you know, enough to take away the human rights violations. You need to put in that anesthetic and topical vasoconstrictor. And, you know, frankly, the best one is cocaine because it does both. But a lot of formularies don't have it because there's sort of a collective freak out about, oh, it's cocaine, it's a drug. And the pharmacy's full of drugs. Anyway, pet peeve. And then also, you need to know your equipment. Everybody has different equipment. It's one of my pet peeves for years is that somebody in the emergency department, in your urgent care, wherever, will have been talking to the beautiful rep that sells the new device, and it might really be a great device. And then they stock your department with it, and it goes in the corner. And then when it comes to using it, neither you nor anybody else knows how to use it. So know your devices, know how to use them. Otherwise, you look like an idiot flipping around there trying to work out this newfangled thing, and you have no idea what you're doing.